Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers. It's Dump Truck DS and RC here, and the latest episode of QuakeCast is upon you, like a pox upon you.
Gross.
This time we've got Jeremiah Killpixel Fox, and RC, tell us a little bit about Mr. Fox.
So everybody might know him as the guy who made Cartographer's Nightmare from years ago, this very gigantic, complex Quake map, right? But it also turns out that he's working on a little game called Wrath that everybody may have heard of the past couple of weeks. It's a new Quake engine-based game coming out from 3D Realms. And he, believe it or not, has been sort of the guy behind it all from the very beginning. So we're going to talk to him not only about sort of his life journey, because it's very interesting how not only did he start the game, but how he came to the realization that this is going to be his future working on this game. But we also get into some of the details of Wrath and what to expect from the game. But first, I want to thank Dan's from Discord for our cool 3D Realms-inspired QuakeCast logo that he provided us this week. Thanks, Dan's. So without further ado, let's talk to Jeremiah.
The beginning in this case is 96. See, I was born in 88, so that makes, I was 8 years old. Yeah, we'll say 96. That's right. My family got the first desktop computer I've ever seen in my life. It was a Windows 95 Packard Bell. I think it had like a 70 megahertz processor, maybe a couple megs of RAM, a couple meg hard drive. And at that time, you know, being 8 years old, I was basically playing edutainment titles, like like Putt-Putt Goes to the Moon, Yobi's Basic Spelling Tricks, just... entertainment or edutainment stuff, but there was a couple demos on it. It was Descent and Descent 2, which as a kid that was into Star Wars basically blew my mind. You get to sit in like this cockpit of a spaceship and blow up robots. We couldn't get the sound effects working, so it was just like the music, so like the music's completely like ingrained in my brain. So that really kicked off my love affair with just gaming and computers and technology in general. So right after that, my parents divorced, so life changed radically. Dad bounced, we left, went to another state. A couple years later, I got another computer. It was a Windows 98 machine this time. Had a Voodoo 2. The main game on that was Duke Nukem 3D, which I played in secret because my mom hated it. And yeah, and that was amazing. That really solidified my love affair with first-person shooters. I lived in Duke Nukem 3D. Another game came along that really, again, just sort of like just changed my entire perception of what games are, and that was Riven, the sequel to Myst. And that was just absolutely mind-blowing. Like that showed me that games are bigger than movies, they're bigger than books. I mean, it was like when I played Riven, it was like, I'm not playing Riven, I'm going to this place. I mean, it was like a ritual. I was obsessed with that game. So, so playing Duke, Riven, another big game for me at that time was Descent 3, you know, the Voodoo 2, 3D graphics, all that kind of stuff. And I didn't really get into too deep into PC gaming after that. I mean, at this time I was 11 years old. It wasn't anything I wanted to pursue. It was just something I really enjoyed. We ended up getting a PlayStation at some point, played like Spyro. Love the Spyro games. I still do. I think those are just phenomenal games. They're like the console version of Doom in the sense that they're just like this sort of this pure video game to me.
Yeah, they're just fun.
Yeah, it's just a great game. Actually, this is kind of funny. I didn't get into Doom until I was like 18, which is kind of weird. And Quake even later, but we'll get to that. Yeah, I saw Doom, I think when I was around 8, when we had that first computer. I think I came downstairs, my dad was playing it in the dark, and I watched him for a moment, and he sent me to bed. And I think the main reason I didn't have any contact with that game for a decade was it pretty much scarred me. I still have like really vivid nightmares just from seeing that little bit. Like at one point we had an iguana. I think my dad was like, one of his friends was like on deployment or something like that, and we kept it for like a month or two. And in my dream, I was... I think it was a a parking garage, and it was dark, and I was wandering around, and this massive iguana jumps out from behind a pillar, like my size, jumps on me, splits me open from like the bottom of my neck to like my pelvis, and we roll down this ramp, and in my dream, like I get like a third person perspective, and as we're rolling, the Doom logo is being spelled out in my blood. Like,
oh my god.
Oh man, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, so that was pretty metal, especially for an 8-year-old.
So, Iguana Boss in Wrath confirmed, I think.
Right. Yeah.
I was going to say, there we go.
Yeah, that's what you open, so. And parking garages, too. We'll have plenty of those. So that was interesting.
Wow.
Didn't even know about Quake at the time. I kind of seen it. It was just, to me, like this brown thing in my
still is.
My vision. Yeah, it's, yeah. But, you know. So let's see. So where was I? This was like 99, 11 years old. Played, you know, Duke, Riven, all those games. Had PlayStation, you know, had other interests too. It wasn't like super hardcore in the gaming just yet. And then like in, I want to say, 02, so it was maybe 14 at this time, we get a Dell Dimension desktop. First time I'd ever seen an LCD screen, like 1024 by 768, totally mind-blowing. Like, this is the future kind of thing. And another game dropped to my lap that also, again, just totally changed my sort of like my understanding of video games. We actually picked up at a bargain bin at Walmart, and that was Morrowind. And that was the first game I've ever like done an all-nighter with. Like, it was the kind of thing, like, I get up at 5 a.m., get on the computer, and go to bed at 1 a.m. Like, I've never done that for anything. But this game totally captivated me. And I think I played a few other games, but nothing really can recall. Let's see. Then a couple years later, 2004. I think I'm 16. I go to my friend's house and I see Half-Life 2. Didn't know about Half-Life. See Half-Life 2 and I see Doom 3. Doom 3 was amazing at the time. I think he was super gamer kid. He had, you know, the best hardware at the time. I think he had like an NVIDIA GT 7800 or 7800 GT, which was, you know, pretty top tier at the time, I think.
Yeah, god tier, yeah.
Yeah. And that was amazing. Got to, you know, see Doom running at pretty much max spec, and like that was just crazy. Or Doom 3. And then finally I get into Doom. I think I'm living alone at this point. This is like 06, so I'm, 18. Have plenty of time on my hands, and I just find Doom. And that was like meeting your soulmate.
Yeah.
That was an amazing experience. That was, I think I've played now from that point, so this was, you know, 13 years ago. I think I've played more Doom than I've played anything else. Just love that game. I think it's, like I was saying, it's just, to me, that is a pure first-person shooter. It's in my opinion, like the pinnacle of FPS, really. It's still really unique in terms of FPSs. Like, that's something I kind of tried to replicate that, and I soon realized if you want to replicate Doom, the only way to do it is to be Doom. Like, all you can really just do is just replace the art. So it's like it's almost like an all or nothing thing. So let's see. Later, finally discover Quake. I think this was in maybe 08 or 09. So yeah, I was drinking at the time, so it was definitely 09 or later. So yeah, played Quake for the first time. Win Quake. I played it at, let's see, 1280 by 1024 at my friend's house. I was like living with him at the time. And played Quake, played all the expansions, and that was another, just totally fell in love with it. I thought everything about Quake was awesome. Like, especially the software rendering, it just looked like, that was the first time I'd actually kind of noticed software rendering or like that kind of look. And to me, it just looked so otherworldly, like a painting that moves. It's kind of hard to explain, but it was just such an interesting aesthetic, just the grit, the tech base, and then going to the medieval stuff. It was the speed, you know, I felt kind of bummed that I had missed out on, you know, at that point, a decade of Quake. So yeah, I was playing just a ton of Quake, was totally consumed by it for years. Kind of got off PC gaming for a while, did a bunch of other stuff. Came back to Quake in 2000, I don't know, 2008, 2012, I think, 2011, 2012. And I wanted to replicate the same experience I had at this, of course, at this point. Now there's like better source ports. And I I think I was looking at what source port was I using? I want to say like DirectQ or something. One of those.
Oh yeah.
And I was trying to replicate software mode. Like I didn't really at that when I first played Quake, I didn't know about OpenGL stuff. Like I had no understanding of like really how games worked. Like it was like I think I just kind of knew what everybody knew, just kind of what you could glean from watching a game. It's like, okay, there's polygons and they're textured and you know, then it just it's magic and it works. So I was trying to replicate the software experience and I was noticing Z fighting, which I didn't know at the time. So I was like, oh, well, this is really bothering me. I want to, you know, get to the bottom of this. So I did some Googling. I think I found Quake One or Funk Message Board, one of the, you know, basically found the Quake scene. And I think my first post was something along the lines of trying to explain what Z fighting was. Like, yeah, I see like the staticky, static, weird, like when you move, it moves around. Like how do I fix this? It's annoying. What's the problem? And of course, you know, everyone's like giving me all this technical stuff, assuming that I have any idea of what, you know, anything is.
Right.
So they tell me that it can be fixed by altering the maps. I was like, okay, altering the maps, what do you mean? So they explained to me like, you know, levels are made this way, this kind of thing, and the maps have been released by John Romero himself. You need to get a level editor. So someone pointed, like, I think linked me like GTK Radiant 1.5. He said, this is how you fix it. I was like, okay, cool. So I installed the editor, opened up the map, and basically just hit keys until something happened. And did that for a few days and realized that was kind of dumb and decided to open up the user manual. And basically just went through the map and just tried to fix all the issues. Now, looking back, I'm sure I did it. I know I did it. Everything incorrectly, because I didn't really, you know, get it. And so that was like my first quote contribution to the Quake community was I think I released like a Z fixed map pack or something like that. I don't think it was even complete, and it really needs to be redone if there's no longer a need to do that because engines, you know, account for that and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so that's when the sort of the epiphany happened. As I was altering these maps, I was like, okay, so you can just make maps. Like, that's a thing you can do. And then I realized that that's what people were doing. It's like, so you can make maps. If you can make maps, that means you can make models. And if you can make models, you can make sounds. If you can do that, you can make a game, pretty much. And I kind of, you know, was poking around, kind of just threw that idea out there and be like, well, yeah, you can make the game. And not only that, the technology is open source. It's like, that's amazing. So I had a real long, hard think about that, basically. You know, I always loved games. I always loved just art in general. I was really into movies. You know, in my preteens, my idols were like James Cameron and Steven Spielberg. And before that, like, you know, when I was first getting computers, I was like 8. My idols were like Stan Lee. I was into comic books like Stan Lee and like Ray Harryhausen. I was always like doing like stop motion stuff, like just really into like all this kind of stuff. And I was like, games are like all my interests. And I was doing music too. Like, games like encompass everything I'm interested in. You can do storytelling, visual effects, sound, music, everything. Like, it has it all.
And world building too. You know,
yeah, and world building, all that kind of stuff. So all the stuff I enjoyed up to that point, because up to that point, it was all magic to me. It was nothing that even occurred to me was something you could do. So I had a real long, hard think about that. This was in, like I said, I think 2012 or something like that. So At the time I was 24. I was working as a graphic designer at a newspaper in a small rural town in Northwest Arkansas. I was living in a trailer like a mile down the road from my mom's house because that's all I could afford. And just kind of hitting the ceiling of that path. Like I had asked for the owner for a raise, and that was declined, and that kind of the idea of Wrath happened. There was like sort of a confluence of things happening at the same time, just my personal life and just everything. And I was having like almost like a series of epiphanies, like, okay, so this is basically your life unless you do something. I want to make a game, but you know, I don't even know how to you know, compile a map yet kind of thing. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to take this a step at a time. I want to make a game, but I really need to see if this is something I can do. So I made a map called Cartographer's Nightmare. It was released as something called Cartographer's Nightmare, but it's really just a learner's map. Like, if you play that, that basically has my first brushes ever laid in my own, and that was it. That's the only thing I've mapped for aside from Wellrath. And so that, like, that was basically my vector into, like, or my entry point into, like, making games was Quake mapping. So I did that, and then as I really started to assess the situation, like what it would take to make a game, I realized I can't do it. It's way beyond my ability. It would take so much time, it would take so much money. Like, it would have to be a commercial endeavor. It would need other people. I mean, I estimated that I would need 2 to 3 years to learn how to do everything, which ended up not being the case. It ended up taking much longer. So I basically basically totally depressed me. And I said, okay, this is not something that I can do. This is not something for me. This is not my future. And basically put it on the shelf. The same time, that's when I like asked for the raise and was declined. An old love in my youth came back to my life for a moment and then disappeared. And that, you know, was crystal clear. We were never going to have a future. So that bummed me out. It was just a whole bunch of things. So feeling kind of lost and I don't know, well, just bummed, I put in my notice, my 2-week notice, which kind of ended up being like my 3-month notice so we could train somebody, and just wanted to do something else, get out from under fluorescent lights. I was kind of having like a Joe versus the volcano moment, if you guys have seen that.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like I got like a little gig as an apprentice for a HVAC technician. And basically did that for a summer, just tried to figure out what I wanted to do. At least I was outside in the sun. And yeah, so my thought was, okay, I need to do something. I think at that time I think it was a fairly, I don't know if fearful is the right word, but I was, yeah, maybe fearful. I was fearful of a lot of things. I was, well, afraid of failure in general, disappointment, but I was also afraid of things like driving in the city. Or change, or going somewhere away from my family, that kind of thing. And I realized that I was at a point to where it's like, okay, this is either going to be your life, which is fine, you know, and you can let these things dictate what you do, or you can do something about it. And so I kind of had like my approach was sort of like rip the Band-Aid off kind of thing and just tackle everything at once. So I quit that job, sold anything I had of value, which is very little, put the rest in storage, put my computer in storage, bought a bunch of camping gear. I bought like a tent, a sleeping bag, got a big old propane tank and a propane grill, bought an 80-pound box of quinoa off Amazon. So I knew I wouldn't starve.
Whoa.
No matter what, I wouldn't starve. And I basically stuffed all this in my 2000 Toyota Corolla, collected every deposit I could from, you know, like rent and all that kind of stuff, and collected as much money as I could. And decided I wanted to go to the ocean. I loved the ocean. I needed to get out, needed to do something. So I looked up, like, well, where's the ocean that's kind of nearby? And I was like, well, if I'm gonna go, I really want to go somewhere pretty. So I like, okay, the Florida Keys. I had, you know, my country, like I didn't know what that was. I thought it was just like some desolate islands at the end of the United States that I could kind of just go and brood and be, you know, and just be sort of a hermit. So like, okay, I'll just go there. So I found a camping spot, you know, like rented it for, you know, 4 or 5 days and left. I think this was the end of September end of September 2012. Got up early. A couple of my siblings met me. Sophia, she was 12 at the time, and I think Sam was there. He was 8. Got up early just to say goodbye to me, you know, gave him a hug and drove off. And it's actually interesting. It was just a beautiful, beautiful morning. Ozark Mountains are a beautiful place. It's just a beautiful country. Yeah. So we're driving through and yeah. So I left and was actually going down this road called the Pig Trail. And it was just this beautiful early morning. Like everything was just so like green and lush, and the sun was beaming through, and I was just driving and I was just thinking about what I was doing. I was scared. I was excited. I was sad to leave my family. And I think I just cried for a little while as I left.
Yeah, what a moment, really.
Yeah, it was intense. I was like, what am I doing? And so I basically left, and I think the road trip took like 3 days, you know, learned to essentially drive in the city, luckily no one died. You know, just slept in gas stations and rest stops. And Corollas are not comfortable to sleep in, by the way, if anybody's wondering, especially when they're filled to the brim with quinoa. But
just drowning in quinoa, right, swimming around. And,
really crunchy. I couldn't have time to cook it on the run, so it's just knacking down on it. Yeah. So, yeah, so finally get to the Keys. Oh, yeah, I think I had the flu at this time, too. So I was just a mess. I really was a mess. I was just sad and lost and sick and all this kind of stuff. And finally made it to the campsite. And that's where, like, really my life kind of changed. Like, I parked the car, got out, walked to the beach, put my sand in the, or my feet in the water, and was just like, okay, I made it. I lived. I made it. It's okay. And just sort of, I don't know, I just sort of hung out for a minute, just sort of healed, I guess, like physically, you know, was getting over my cold and just sort of put away the things that were bumming me, making me sad, making peace with whatever, and enjoyed how beautiful the Keys were. It was just so mm-hmm. beautiful, just sunny and the ocean. I was just snorkeling all the time, just camping and, you know, sleeping under the stars. And it was just really just great. I brought my little acoustic guitar and was just, you know, writing music and just enjoying. I was enjoying not having any obligations and not being afraid of failure, because it's like, I'm already at, like, I have nothing to lose at this point. You know what I mean? I don't have a house mm-hmm. anymore. Yeah. I just have a car with some food. I don't have a job. And it was incredibly liberating. It was like, it was almost like the world is your oyster. You can do anything at this point. You know what I mean? Like, you mm-hmm. know, it was weird being, like, having nothing to lose, quote unquote, but also knowing you're safe. Like, you're not going to, you know, get caught in a genocide or starve or something like that. So it was just, everything right. was like sort of potential. And also I was broke as hell. I think I had $40 in my wallet. So I didn't go on this big Florida road trip I wanted to do. I was like, oh yeah, I'm stuck in the Keys. I'm not going back. I'm going to stick this out, do this. So I think I got on Craigslist, made some calls, did an interview, ended up getting a job at an art gallery. I think I was the production manager there for like 10 months. So I'm in the Keys. I spent like the first month or two living in my car, basically, or finding parking spots that I could like park in and sleep in without the cops chasing me off, and worked and just saved. Someone at work let me sleep on a cot in their living room for like $75 a week. So that was awesome. Being able to get horizontal at night was awesome. So that was really cool. Then I quickly met the woman that would eventually become my wife. We hit it off immediately. I think since we've met, we've been apart. Like, I don't think there's been no length of time that we've really been apart. Like, we've just been by each other's side day, but, you know, every day. So that was super great.
Did she know that you were sort of on this like self-discovery journey at the moment, or?
Not, you know, that's not something you just like throw out there the very beginning.
Sure, yeah.
But I think she kind of gathered. It was probably kind of obvious. That was really cool. So we got an apartment, and so I was all of a sudden found myself stable. You know, I was had a desk job, and then it kind of got weird. I'm like, well, okay, well, after that high of like everything is potential, blah blah blah, I'm like, well, here I am sitting under fluorescent lights again in front of a computer, working for somebody else. You know, doing photoshopping and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. And wrath was just poking at the back of my mind. It was really nagging. And it was nothing. Even though I told myself, this is not for you, you can't do this, and put it on the shelf, I just kind of started thinking about it again. And I was, you know, started doodling and writing down ideas. And I didn't even have my computer during this whole time. So I was totally outside of like gaming and all that. I was separate from that. And just really thought long and hard about it, and went back up north for a minute just to visit family, picked up my computer, came back, started working on Cartographer's Nightmare some more just to kind of refresh my memory. And I had another big long think, and the gist was, the odds of you failing are, it's almost certain you're going to fail. However, there is a path to succeeding. Like, it's there in some alternate universe. Wrath exists. There's a way to get to it. And the bottom line was if I didn't do this or pursue it or really focus my whole life on doing this thing, even if I failed, I would regret it the rest of my life.
Right.
So I told, or I talked to my girlfriend. I said, okay, I want to quit my job and I want to learn how to make a game. And I explained to her, like, sort of like a mad scientist, like how this could work.
and she's like, yeah, right.
And sure. She was actually very supportive. She's like, okay, well, I believe in you. And that was like, and she gave me the green light. And I was like, all right, we're doing this. So I left and I was like, okay, I need to work. So I found the most tourist trappy restaurant I could find. Like, I need to find a restaurant that will, I can wait tables, turn a buck fast. So I wanted to find like something that had like the most turnover, that kind of thing. So, and that was also another one of my fears, was doing that kind of thing. So I was like, okay, let's go with this whole tackle your fears thing. Let's keep doing that. So I got a job waiting tables and I did that for 3 years. It was the big tourist trap. And so I was basically slinging entrees and spilling beers while I learned to, well, make games, learned how to map, learned how to do art, learned how to model, animate, do sounds, all that kind of stuff. Didn't learn how to do programming. I tried that many times and it was just, I realized it was something, it would take me a lot of time. Also, it's one of those things because it's like, I did web design for a while, which is not programming, but it's sort of the means to the end is the same, where you're using like scripts and stuff. It's what I'm saying is, it's like with programming, you can technically do something almost perfect. So the perfectionist in me would like want to like refine code over and over and over again. It would be sort of like an optimize. It would be sort of like this rabbit hole I knew that I would probably fall into and totally derail what I was doing. So I didn't do programming. So I spent the 3 years doing that. And then finally I had some art. And also during that time I was talking to various investors. There was a guy that kind of heard my story. His name was Les, and he was a retired guy in South Florida, and he believed there could be something to come out of this. So he brought me to people that had money to spend. Of course, it all fell. Nothing happened, because all I had was like some janky mock-ups and basically a promise, which was, this game needs to exist. There's nothing else like it right now. There wasn't at the time. There was nothing. This is going to happen. People are going to, this is a market that's going to be saturated with games before too long. We need to get on this, do it now. I can learn how to do it. I just need the money. And of course, no one is going to believe that. No one's going to believe that. Like, I went to Indie Fund, all that kind of stuff, nothing. So I was like, okay, well, I'm on my own. So just save, just wait table, save, and then just fund it yourself, or fund like a prototype. So I finally had some money saved and I was ready to actually start putting stuff together. I put a post like on Funk looking for a programmer to help me do sprites. Ended up meeting a guy named Noel, who's still our programmer and has since become a good friend. And we just started putting together a prototype. We did that for about a year. Just, you know, figuring things out. It was sprite based at the time. And so at this point, I think Dusk had come out. There were a few other games, and every time a game came out, it was almost just like I felt like a nail in my coffin. It's like I'm falling behind. You know, just for some perspective, there was at a point in time where I thought I could launch before Doom 2016. I was just constantly chasing the carrot kind of thing. And so all these games are coming out. Doom 2016 comes out, Dusk, Medieval, all these games. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm too late. So that was kind of annoying. Anyway, so then I see Iron Maiden and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm up against. This is definitely the competition. Like before, all the games were cool, but they didn't quite check all the boxes for me. Mm-hmm. But Iron Maiden was the closest. I'm like, okay, this is it. So I got on their Discord just to kind of, it's kind of weird, but just as a business kind of point of view, just to keep tabs on them, see what they were doing, what kind of moves they plan to make, that kind of thing. We'll see what I could learn. But also there was sort of like this longing to sort of just talk about what I was passionate about, because it was, aside from like a few posts on Funk and elsewhere, I was pretty secretive about what I was doing. One, because it was all, you know, like my learner stuff. Here's my learner's model, my learner's texture, my, you know, that kind of stuff. So I didn't really want to share it, but there's still this need to talk about it. So I just started talking with some of the Iron Maiden guys and shared a video of one of the weapons I had just done, and, you know, and then wake up to an email from 3D Realms and had to do like a double take. Like, is this a mistake? What's going on? Getting in an hour, getting to a call with the tribunal. And that was interesting. I think I was like I think I was definitely nervous. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. But so yeah, we talked for a while. I think maybe 4 or 5 weeks, something around there, came to an agreement. Everything was cool, and Wrath got greenlit. So wow. we started. And also at the time, you got to understand, when I was working on Wrath, I was scoping out the Quake scene, looking at what people were doing, looking at mappers. So I had already, the plan all along was like, okay, we're going to get something happening, going to get funding, and then we're going to bring on the community. This is how this game needs to be made. So that's basically what we did. And so we worked on that for like 10 months. Then we got to a point where we're like, okay, let's reveal the game. We revealed the game. That was a couple days ago. And then I got an invite from you guys, and now here I am. That's basically, wow. That's the gist of Wrath.
Well, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I tried to keep it short. Sorry, that was
no. It's really compelling, and it's really refreshing to hear something so personal to you. And it just reinforces how excited I am for Wrath because of the people involved. I said this to Fred earlier, but hearing that was amazing, dude. And congratulations cool. too, because you had a vision, you stuck with it. You could have failed. You obviously have support from the people that love you, and that is awesome.
Oh, and actually, that's one thing I do got to say. Yeah, it's weird that I just spent 30 minutes talking about me. In this story, there is a cast of so many people. That have supported me along the way in so many different ways, either materially or material. I can't talk good.
That too.
Monetarily or just emotional support or just, saying that's cool or keep going. There are so many people that have helped me in so many different ways to overcome my own baggage or to whatever. So without them, there's no way this would be happening.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's amazing that you took off on your own to kind of start this whole journey. But yeah, I think without the cast of characters and your wife and everything, you probably wouldn't have gotten to this point, I assume.
No, absolutely not. So,
I got it. When you were telling the story, I on a personal note, how you were living in your car and you had your quinoa and everything was just, it was amazing. And you put your feet in the water and really enjoyed that moment. I was sitting there kind of projecting myself in there, and I just never have had that moment in my life. Now, I've had wonderful things in my life, and I've been very lucky and very fortunate. We were talking about that off air, but I've never had that moment that you had where you were completely free because, going to school, going to college, mm-hmm. having mm-hmm. a girlfriend and having a fiance, and it always feels like there's a goal out there. And that you need to be keep reaching for it, or if there's something wrong, at least from my perspective in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was really envious when you were telling that part of the story, because I'm like, gosh, you know what? I'm 51 and I don't think I've ever had that where I had zero responsibilities mm-hmm. and there was the field of pure potentiality out right. there. So good for you. And like we said, Fred said nothing but bad things about you on the previous right. interview. So now we have both sides of the story now.
No, cool.
But in all seriousness, I do want to say that it's really exciting to see someone in the community kind of fulfill that and then to reach out to the community. We did talk to Fred about that. So can you give us a little indication of how you interact with some of these community members? Like, I know some of them and you've probably grown closer, but how did that work? It was like, welcome to my world. Here are my toys. How did that go? How did that go down?
Well, it was more like, I wish it was like, here's these toys. It was more like, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Let's, it was kind of interesting. It was more like, actually, I think the shoe was on the other foot. It wasn't like, I mean, these were people that all these people are respected and was always trying to get to where they're at. Like the reason I stayed in the community was because it was full of just many talented people, a wealth of knowledge. And I was just a noob, a total noob. So you gotta understand, I was looking like up at the community and still do. So it was almost like a little bit like, I want to say starstruck is too strong of a term, but like, oh, I'm talking to so-and-so. They're actually interested in what I'm doing. That was a really cool super cool moment. So that's more how it was, is me like, so is this cool? Is this something you want to do? Because that'd be cool if you, I mean, why don't you, you know, I've been wanting you to be on this, you know, for years, but just didn't have anything to show for it. So it was more like that.
That's awesome. Now, let me, I do have a question. I'm going to step backward in your personal development on the project. So I know that there is, because I followed this project and I actually reached out to you. I don't know if you remember, but I did.
No, you did. And that was actually, I will say about that, that was that, you know, when I'm talking about this cast of characters that have helped me in various ways, that was an important email for me.
Oh, wow.
It really was encouraging. I received a couple of different emails from a few different people, and no, it was very encouraging. Thank you for that. It really, it,
that's cool.
It, well, good to, contributed good to this.
Awesome. Well, I know that there was a moment when you, because you had a clear vision, and I know you were really trying with the sprites and trying to make this happen. And I will say, I don't think you lost anything in the translation going to full 3D, but can you talk a little bit about that decision? Because I know it was probably a tough one for you.
It was. I wanted to do sprites because at the time I wanted it to be more Doom-y. Like, kind of like what I was saying about, I basically learned that if you wanted to make Doom, you've got to make Doom. Mm-hmm. And so it was just sort of like the limit, the way sprites limit you in terms of gameplay, but even though that you kind of end up like in this Master of None situation where you can't be full 3D, but you can't be full like Doom, you know, mm-hmm. it's just sort of bland. Also, sprites are hard to make, apparently. So that was interesting. So yeah, that was basically the switch. And I was like, okay, for the type of gameplay we want to do and for the deep level of detail and the things we want to achieve, sprites aren't it for this. I still want to do a sprite game. Basically, it would have to be a Doom reskin, essentially. But yeah, it was kind of hard. I was sad for a little while. I even still made sprites afterward just to sort of like longingly look at their pixels. But yeah, no, I'm all on board the 3D bandwagon now.
And did you, and then was that still just you and Noel at the time?
It was, yeah.
Right. So that was still kind of pre 3D realms. Okay, cool. I was just curious about that because like I remember going, wow, that must have been so tough. And I know you got feedback from the community, but yeah, you were a little, you definitely held your cards close to the vest for sure. And that's cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it just makes this reveal so much more delightful anyway. So
cool. Yeah.
So how has it been since the reveal? Are you excited? Are you relieved? You know, how do you feel?
Yes. Yeah, both. I'm excited. I'm relieved. Also, more pleased. Like, how do I say this without sounding totally arrogant? I expected good feedback kind of thing. Like, yeah. I was hoping, like, that was the goal. So you kind of have to expect what you're working toward. You know what I mean? So I was pleased that what I was working for ended up being there, which was good, which was positive feedback. So mostly just relieved, mostly pleased, like, okay, things are going as planned kind of thing. But yeah, some of the stuff is just overwhelming. Like, especially in the beginning, it's like, it was really surreal, to be honest. Like, just to go from, well, basically holding prototypes close to the vest to, you know, being written about in articles and seeing like a Steam page and a trailer and people talking about it. Yeah, really surreal. But it's been very cool.
That is cool. I believe, and I could be wrong about this, maybe I dreamt it, but I feel like years ago you contacted me on YouTube and I may have played like a very tiny little two-room portion of this, or it was at least something you might have been working on.
I don't know if I reached out to anybody directly. Maybe my memories. Yeah, I definitely would not have revealed Wrath. I mean, it may be Cartographer's Nightmare, but I think that was something that I just kind of put out there so it didn't like just rot away on my hard drive.
Well, there were videos, though. There were definitely videos that unlisted YouTube videos that he was sharing with the community. So that might be what you're thinking of.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
I did do a little bit of that just to kind of get see what people were thinking. But yeah.
Yeah. It was very cool back then. And my question was going to be, has the game always been known as Wrath? Did you have a working title before? Or?
Yes. The game was basically always Wrath. Yes. Always Wrath from the beginning.
Okay.
The reason Wrath is, well, I wanted a strong one-syllable word, like Doom or Quake or Blood. Mm-hmm. And I like Wrath. I mean, what do you think of Wrath? What do you think of? You think of anger. With anger, you think of like heat. You think of energy, destructive potential. Like all these things work well with the game I was trying to make anyway. I'm like, okay, cool, Wrath. It's a cool word. It can be stylized in a logo it fits along with Doom and Quake, and it's evocative of sort of these ideas that
it feels biblical too. It's more biblical proportions, like the wrath of God, the wrath of Khan. You know, the best wrath is wrath of Khan. Sorry, you've got the second.
Khan! Wrath of the Lich King? I don't know.
There you go. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's wrath. I think for like one moment, like a day, literally, I think it was Ruin, but that ended up going to the subtitle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, Ruin would have been good too. But I actually like the subtitle. It definitely, I don't know what the full story is behind the game or whatever, but it almost suggests there's some... I don't want to say time traveling, but at least like a lot of time has elapsed since another time, and the Outlander has now awoken or been summoned or something like that to take care of business here, which is, I don't know. The trailer's got me excited, I can tell you that.
Cool.
Okay, so what I wanted to ask you next was about the hub system. Now, I know I don't want to step in it too much, but there have been just little inklings and questions about how, and I don't even want to, I know it's probably not called a hub system, but you have this kind of interconnected world. There's little kind of allusions to maybe a Metroidvania type of game mechanic, things like that. How much can you tell about us about that, and how long has that kind of been percolating?
Everything. No, I can tell you a bit. Yeah, it's basically we think backtracking is a feature, and we just want you to backtrack as much as possible through empty worlds. That's our plan.
Oh, great.
Okay, so let me just... Yeah, so the way the game works, it's split up into three chapters. Each chapter sort of has a distinct... Well, definitely has a distinct theme, separate from one another. Not only theme visually, but mechanically... And in each one of those chapters, so in the chapter, there's a hub level, and then there's five levels connected to that. So, yeah, each one has its own theme, and then within each chapter, there's sort of sub-themes. So the point is, one, we want the player to constantly experience something fresh, not just mechanically, but also just visually. So basically, every level is different, but the way they string into one another, they all gel and work. They're not just so lots of contrast, lots of variety. You're going to experience a lot of different things. So yeah, so three chapters, each with a hub world, each with five levels. The way the hubs work is they're semi-linear because we can't have them all open at once for balancing issues, and also you're basically playing the same level over and over again, fundamentally. So the way it works is you get to tackle levels and sets, essentially. So like say level one and two will be unlocked, and within those levels you can gather enough keys to unlock either level three or four, and then just keep progressing. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially how that works.
Yeah, that's cool. I did read also that there's going to be sort of a, you could talk to how deep this is actually applied as a genre, but that there's going to be sort of a Metroidvania approach. And with the backtracking, it sounds like it's there, but does this also apply to other things like abilities can, help do things in other levels that you couldn't do before, that kind of thing?
Potentially, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously the backtracking thing was a joke. We don't want the player to, backtrack. Not like Quake 2 style backtracking where it's like, oh, gray box, another gray box, another gray box. The worlds are very, this is interesting. They're very detailed, but we don't want them to be noisy or interfere with gameplay. So there's a lot of things to explore. So and any minor backtracking you do, if you do want to go back to another level to collect something or to unlock something or explore something else that might be open kind of thing, it's not going to be uninteresting at all. It's actually, we're making it so it's like, even if it is empty, it's a place you want to be. You just want to look around. It's like Disneyland kind of thing. So, yeah.
One of the things I'm excited about Wrath is that you're not just making a Quake clone per se. You know, you're bringing us new gameplay that fits with the technology and fits with the aesthetic of the game, but you're bringing us a lot more, but it still kind of is going to feel like that, that experience. You're not trying to, like, you're just bringing a new kind of a new dimension to this, this feeling that we all have with, that a lot of modders and people are kind of pushing things and adding things and just sprinkling things. And at some point it gets lost, that, you know, that Quake feeling, that Barton Fink feeling.
Right.
but that's what I'm really excited about, because you are really taking something and making it fresh, but it doesn't feel like a gimmick or anything. It feels right. Like it's all cohesive, which is really exciting. And I know that you took little ingredients from all these games that you analyzed, and I think Fred alluded to that too. So that's something that I think everybody needs to kind of keep their eye out for, because it just I know you're not telling us everything, which is even more exciting.
No.
Which is great, you know.
Yeah. Actually, that's kind of, I think, where some of the criticisms arrive so far is just, is because of what we're showing, which is just like, okay, here's a taste kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But there's way more behind that. The game it's going to be a big, dense game.
Cool. It's great. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about multiplayer? You're just kind of doing the basics early on, and that there might be some plans, but here's my big question, because my big concern with Wrath is that it will not, and this isn't your job really, but I'm hoping that it will kind of redress some of the issues that we have as a community with Quake, where there's a bunch of different source ports. Well, that's not going to be the case with your game. There's ease of entry. Some source ports are better than others. That's not going to be a problem, right? You're going to have a unified, you know, EXE that you're going to jump into. But what I'd request or ask you about is that, are you going to make it easy for this modders and mappers and things, you know, to actually kind of put their content out there? Is that part of the discussion right now, or is that something you have to cross when you get to it?
That was one of the pillars of the game from the beginning and has not changed. The entire development is very modern or modder focused. We want it to be as easy as possible, not just to make maps, textures. Like, this could be the basis of a other game you want to make. You know, one thing I noticed when learning all this is a lot of the information on how to do this stuff is just sort of everywhere. Like, it's in comments, it's in readmes, it's in other mods. So one thing we're trying to do is consolidate all the information, how all this stuff works, all the tools, all the tech, solve all the issues, do all the legwork, and just release documentation, tutorials, tools, everything, and also make the game itself easier to mod than Quake. So yeah, we're very, very, me personally, very, well, all of us, but especially, like, just talking personally, very interested in making it as modder-friendly as possible.
Cool. Yeah, because what I lament that there's not in source ports, it's like the mod menu and the map menu and things, and people, you've got it in one engine, but you don't have it in another engine and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that we could have this be a kind of a platform, and trust me, now that I'm doing Quake C and a project that people are making requests, I totally get just a tiny percentage of like this, but we want this, I want this little feature, and I totally get it. So I don't want you to feel like I'm like nagging you too.
Oh,
much,
no, not just, at all. No,
that's my hope for the product.
As far as feedback is concerned, and just comments in general, no matter what your opinion is, or what your feedback is, or how big or how small a thing you're asking for, this is anybody out there, just lay it on me. You know, that's not to say I'm going to just say yes, this is it, we're going to do this, but I want to hear all of it. I want to consider all of it. You know, but that's not, like I said, that's not a guarantee. But it's only a good thing. It's information that you can use to make decisions. Mm-hmm. So any and all feedback is not just welcome, but requested.
Cool. I'll jump in the Discord and start typing some things up.
Cool. All right. Right.
Dubchuck's like, I got a bulleted list here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely excited at the prospect of all this moddable stuff for the game, maps and everything, because...
Oh, me too.
You know, yeah, Quake has been, you know, it's just kept going and going and going for 20-something years now. And the fact that we're getting another game based in it that's going to say, hey, we're going to continue that tradition is just really, really cool. Because the number one thing that I hear, at least in Discord with everybody that I talk with, all the fans of Quake and fans of other games, is a lot of them will play these newer AAA games that come out. And they enjoy the game, but then they're like, you know, when I'm done, that's it. That's all there is. And nobody can make anything for it. There's no maps. There's no nothing. But I think it's a really good move, especially for our community, to create this game where people are going to be able to play it. And when they are finished with it, they could say, oh, I got this great idea for a map for myself. And they could just go make it. That's going to be so cool.
No, that's actually one of the things I'm looking the most forward to, is seeing what people do. Like, here's everything. Here's all the tools. Here's all everything you need to know. There's no, hopefully the barriers, you know, made as low as possible. Go crazy. You know, and I want to do maps too. For it, you know, just you know, like, here's a little, you know, pack or whatever I'm working on, that kind of thing. And I just, yeah, I just want to see what people are going to do with it. Absolutely.
And speaking of mapping, we noticed this morning, both RC and I noticed that you've got Sleep over there, Sleepwalker, and which is great, because, you know, I know there was already talk about, oh, NetRadiant, oh man, what a bummer. And I've used NetRadiant for years ago with Quake 3 and Call of Duty and stuff. So I know the editor, but there's just something magical about Trench Broom. And so I'm so happy that you'll be able to use Trench Broom. And I think that's such a great, you know, addition. So how and when did that kind of start? How did you get the ball rolling there?
Well, that was, so I'm a full disclosure. I'm a Radiant fan. Mm-hmm. I think Trench Broom is awesome. I'm just so accustomed to Radiant and, you know, but, so yeah, when we started bringing on mappers, they're like, they had the same response, like, oh, Radiant, okay, and this is all right, well, you know, so that was a thing, and yeah, so that's kind of what got the ball rolling. Really, was this desire to use Trench Broom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we're using Q3 BSP now, so that was sort of a no-go at the time. Because Trench Broom didn't support that, so of course he was working on it, and basically reached out to him and brought him on board. So he's just working on Trench Broom alongside us, and we're, you know, we're basically testing it and using it and all that kind of stuff, and he's plugging away, making it more and more awesome every day.
That's great. Yeah, and I do have one kind of geeky Trench Broomy, or well, engine question, BSP, Q3 BSP, sure. Since you guys had to make the transition. So will there be patches in it, or you're kind of drawing the line at just brush-based stuff?
Yeah, we're not doing patches. One, because they're just, I'm not sold on patches anyway. I think at the time they had a place, but now it's easier just to do like a mesh in Blender or something like that. No, we're not using patches. Also, the rule is, you know, figuring out the art direction is, and making sure we don't go over any limits, because we do have some increased limits. You know, we can do more polys, all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, basically, it's, if it can't be made in BSP, you can't put it in, essentially, except for a few static meshes. So, like, a lot of the terrain, like, in sort of the level you guys saw on many other levels, the terrain was initially done in BSP, and then basically just plopped it into Blender and then made a mesh out of it, or, you know, traced it or whatever, and then we pop in a static mesh. But the deal is, if we make it as a mesh or whatever, it's got to be within the realistic limits of BSP.
And that's just a design decision, right?
Yeah, it's
all aesthetic.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
It's not a hard technical limit, because I got it. So, and then I do have a weird little question, because someone brought that up and I was curious about it too. And that, in the trailer, when you're flying through the trees, I think at the top of the trailer, are those meshes, or are there some sprites in there? What's going on with that scene?
Oh, so you're talking about like the beginning sequence?
Where you see the trees.
Yeah, okay. So that whole beginning sequence, that's something I've been wanting to see on a screen for like years. and those are sprite trees. Those were sprite trees I made years ago when I was like learning how to do art. But I was like, okay, if we only see it from one angle, we can put sprite trees in. There are sprite trees in the game, but those are in the skybox way far away, so you can't even tell that there are sprites. They're just sort of like behind fog, way in the distance. But anything you can actually interact with, it's 3D.
Right. But because there was an argument about, boy, if that's a sprite, it was sure hell looks like really good. So it's pretty crazy. Yeah. So, okay, we solved that one. There's a little kind of little niggling question there.
And we still use sprites for some things like explosion effects, like, you know, in blood. Like, the blood is both particles and also animated sprites.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love some of that stuff. And I love how you stuck with that. Because you cannot improve upon, you know, Quake 1 Gibbs, in my opinion, or Jib, sorry, people out there. But I mean, I was delighted to see, you know, a kill pixel on the screen. You
know? Right.
So it's cool. I do love the blood effects and kind of the explosions that we're seeing. It's I don't want to say it's charming, but it's like it made me smile, you know.
Like, yeah, the jibbing is sweet, and it's a little bit more, you know, a little bit more tied into gameplay than, well, it is than Quake. Mm-hmm. You know, for, we call it mutilations. So there is some stuff you didn't see in the trailer, but like you can blow big monsters' arms off or whatever, and that changes the way they behave. You know, they're gonna, if you're missing an arm, you can, your attack is different, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a mechanical element to it. But yeah, so the jibs we have are like for the zombie guys, which are all over the place in this reveal. They have, I think, a set of 12 jibs, and they all spawn at the correct location. They have, you know, the correct orientation, all that kind of stuff. Unlike Quake, where it's like everything spawns at an origin and just kind of, which is cool, but we just wanted something a little more fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all Quake, though. It's all QC. So it's just like, it can be done in Quake. I mean, if it can be done in Wrath, it can be done in Quake.
That's great.
That's awesome. So this summer, we're going to get our first taste, our first blood of Wrath. Can you go into how much might be available, or is that too soon to kind of get into?
How much will be available? Enough to whet your appetite and maybe even be pretty satisfying, but also enough that there'll still be plenty left over for you to sink your teeth in, too, at a later point.
But oh, yeah, and go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish.
No, yeah, go ahead. I don't even know what I was going to say.
No, I'm sorry. This morning we also saw a shot of it running on a Switch, which is crazy.
Right?
This is amazing. That's great. Well, I know one kid who's going to buy it in my household for sure.
Yeah.
He was pretty excited.
It's cool. Actually, that's the first time I touched a Switch and it was playing Wrath. I was like, oh, wow. Switches 1 is cool. And Wrath is running, you know, pegged at 60 FPS on the Switch. That's awesome.
Yeah, so. I love that. That's so huge. So
yeah,
well, congrats. Cool. This is an amazing story, man. We're so happy for you and happy to be just a small part of it. So it's very, very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I really just cannot wait for everybody to get it in their hands and play it. And for me to actually just sit back and just play it. Like, okay, that's behind me. Now I can just enjoy the game that I always wanted to exist, kind of thing.
Yeah,
oh,
and Fred, it's going to take Fred to finish it because he was telling us he spends an hour, you know, every so often playing through games. It's going to take him a long time to finish it.
Right, yeah. It'll be a meaty game, so.
Cool.
Great. Looking forward to the first blood this summer, man, for sure.
Awesome.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for DumpTruck_DS.
Live, right, again.
We'll do it live.
At least it's not live radio. Yeah, and I will say, I want to... oh, shit. I lost my train of thought, guys. I'm a space cadet.
That's right.
The hell was I going to ask you? It was great too. It was the best question.
That's always the way it works.
I remember now. Sorry. So we're going to have to cut that out. 40.
Yeah, I got 40, it.
Natalie.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.